We have translation. The science of God describes the incarnations of the personality of Godhead and his different activities, together with the activities of his great devotees. Okay. So we go ahead here with the purport then. Slide number, whatever it is, five. Slide number five. I guess a little perspective, of course, too, as people coming. This is, of course, Srimad Bhagavatam, the literary incarnation of God. Chaitanya Charitamrita is a Srimad Bhagavatam class. Brihad Bhagavatamrita is, I think, another kind of more kind of concise presentation, you know. So it's the heart of all of our study. Anybody who comes to the highest level of study in the Kali Yuga, Srimad Bhagavatam. And, of course, the purpose is to understand God perfectly and be able to convince others of his existence and to engage in his service as a concrete fact. And so in that process, we have the first canto, which again, is Giri Govardhan describing his more or less preface. You know, what's the history, who's speaking, what's the environment. In the second canto, Sukadeva Goswami starts talking, you know, to Maharaj directly. And a series of summary presentations of the Bhagavatam. And now Sukadeva Goswami is describing to Maharaj Pariksit how he will then tell about the whole story like that. But what will happen, he'll just describe the whole Bhagavatam and the creation of the world and all these things. But as Suda is narrating what he heard from Maharaj Pariksit and Sukadeva Goswami, at the end of this chapter, the sages, I guess, kind of will interject and say, well, that's nice, but what about, what did Maitreya say to Bhadura, you know? So somehow or other, it seems like Maharaj Pariksit must have asked the same question or something, because it says the sages wanted to hear something higher, you know? So this was what part of what was also apparently discussed by Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Pariksit. So third canto, then, will go into this whole meeting of Maitreya and Bhadura and all the things they discussed. And it's a little higher than the Chaturshloki. And that'll go all the way through the fourth canto, I think, somewhere in there. Yeah. And then at the end of the fourth canto, I think maybe part of the fifth canto. Then after that, Bhadura goes home and Maitreya to something. Yeah. Okay. So now here we're in this specific section where Sukadeva Goswami is giving a very nice, you know, kind of like discussion of the content of the Bhagavatam in terms of 10 categories. And today is Avatara Katha, okay, published purport. During the course of the existence of the cosmic manifestation, the chronology of history is created, recording the activities of the living entities. And generally, people in general have a tendency to learn the history and narrations of different men and times. But due to a lack of knowledge in the science of Godhead, they are not apt to study the history of the incarnations of the personality of Godhead. So that's very nice. We put a little picture of one famous person here, which I guess most of us will recognize, the great emperor. Many great emperors, of course, but this was Napoleon Bonaparte. And it probably said this is a natural tendency. Just like, of course, attraction between young boys and young girls, attraction between little children and food, you know, attraction towards animals, or attraction to seeing, you know, colors and beautiful sunsets. There's so many things which chimpanzees, you know, have, and even animals, you know, have different aesthetic attractions and things. And so, of course, because we're people, hearing about great people inspires us. In some ways, our false ego probably thinks, well, I could be as great as Napoleon or something like that. It inspires us with, you know, some kind of higher possibilities in life for ourselves and, you know, to do higher things. Because we're capable of a great amount. And all we're being called upon by animals, for example, all the animals want us to do is to feed them, either by giving them food or becoming food for them. Yeah. But other people, you know, greater people want greater things from us. So it's such a natural inclination to hear about people, you know, and to try and compare our lives. If that goes Sundar Das, our chief here, main associate, he's actually head of a psychiatric hospital here. It's a small one, about 25 beds, but that's enough crazy people to keep anybody busy. And a lot of them are geriatric people. You know, at the end of their life, they start getting senile dementia, which a lot of us may already be experiencing. So one of the things they do, they have like their private rooms, I guess their double rooms, you know, and they take care of them and different things happening with usually chemical treatment, you know. But they also have social worker. And at least once a day, they have an opportunity for them to all get together and sit there and they do some sessions. And one of the things they do is they show a lot of biographical movies, you know. And these older people, it's one of the things they're really trying to do is they're trying to make sense of their life. Sura was saying that these old people's homes, you don't find a lot of happy campers. You know? The Dalai Lama said, you should live a good life so when you're old, you can remember it and enjoy it for a second time. Okay, so that's one perspective on seeing other people's biographies, and it's a very important part of life, even day to day, who am I? You know? So Papa says people in general have a tendency to learn the history and narrations of different men and times. Yeah, different times. You know, if you look at, for example, like Sherlock Holmes movies or what else we got? We got Agatha Christie, you know. Many times they do a pretty good, some of them they do an excellent, you know, presentation of how things were in the period, that period like that. They take old buildings which have been maintained well, and then they spruce them up and put in live flowers and everything else, and the costumes they know and stuff. And then also the character of the people involved, because different times or different mentalities. You know, for example, racism was very, very common in the last century, 1850s, and so maybe like the 1950s, you might say, varying degrees of racial consciousness and nationalistic consciousness and the character of people and their archetypes and how they act and stuff. So it's interesting seeing these and comparing ourselves, and then some things we understand are also just our period and our times. This is the way people think in these times, and it's not just this is an absolute way of thinking and so on. So very natural to hear of different men in different times. But due to a lack of knowledge in the science of God, they are not apt to study the history of the incarnations of the personality of Godhead. So part of this, I think, is just the two things. One is the story aspect, and the other aspect is the intellectual aspect. You know? Because, devotional service, hearing about God, in the mode of ignorance, is conducted out of fear. Mode of passion out of desire, and the mode of goodness out of knowledge. So in that knowledge position, one understands Dhammamritya Jarabhyadi Dukadoshana Darshanam. Yeah, we're in a very, very precarious situation here. When you're young and no wine untasted, okay, it's just no song unsung. And when you're younger in many ways, you're enjoying in many ways like that. Not always, but at least there's some facilities at different times to forget the broad perspective and the broad problems of life and death. You know? Although Krishna is always reminding us of toothaches and social disturbances and threats of violence in so many ways. You know? So we're faced by all these different confrontations from the material nature, but a lot of times, we're permitted to also, if we want to, kind of put our head in the ground and ignore them. Yeah. But as we get knowledge, then we understand, Jamamritya Jaradi Vyadi Dukha Oshdoshana Darshanam. This is one of the, whatever it is, 25 elements for acquiring knowledge in the, 15th chapter of the Gita. The first element is humility. Humility. And then later on, what is your impetus to learn anything? Well, this is your impetus right here, these four things. Yeah. And so being pushed in the mode of ignorance out of fear of death and things like this, we acquire knowledge. And once we acquire knowledge, then we understand you know, this guy, Jesus Christ, or the Prophet Muhammad, or Confucius, or wherever we're from, you know, they seem to have had some perspective on these problems, and they seem to be able to help us. You know? And as we go on, trying to really solve the problem, you know, getting emphasis, getting motivation, you know, then of course we acquire some knowledge. Then we see, okay, hearing the pastimes of God is a very, very simple, palatable way of making spiritual progress. One time in about 1985, 1986, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, AAAS, biggest, most powerful organization, they were having their annual convention in San Francisco, and I was there with the Bhaktivedanta Institute, and I noticed that one of the things they were having was a continuous free screening of the best science films. You know, okay, free movies. So I went there, and there wasn't one of them that wasn't actually, like, interesting, at least for me. You know, and some were quite good. One of them, I ordered it from University of Wisconsin rental thing. It was an incredible movie on science and stuff like that, the history, you know. But it was a very, very painless way, you know, to learn science. It's the same way Krishna's pastimes are a very painless way, you know, to become purified. First to get liberated from the material world, liberated from suffering, and then to acquire actual perspective and attitude, you know, to understand how Krishna is present, and then to reawaken our relationship with him through his manifestation in this world, through his incarnations, and through his energies. You know? And then after that, to start to reawaken our relationship with him in the, you know, what we call it, the Amrita, you know, the Amrita atmosphere, like that. Chaitanya Charitamrita. Yeah. So when people have some taste, also get it, they just don't see good presentations. I mean, how many good presentations do we have of Christian stories? There are some. There's some really big movies, like just one of the Life of Jesus, I think. They used to play it at Easter every year in maybe in three or four parts, you know. And it was quite compelling, very good actors and stuff like that. And also another one, what is it, Joan of Arc. There's some nice movies of her done. But in the end, too, also they lack, you know, they lack some perspective in terms of the pure Bhagavad philosophy and culture like that. And then from our side, too, how can we also go ahead, you know, and present these things, our knowledge of God, of Godhead, in a nice way that is logical and everything, but also satisfies the logic, which is a human craving, but also goes ahead and satisfies the tasty, you know, thing for stories for heroes. What's his name? Narada Muni. When he's describing the science of God to Vyasadeva, he says, even though a philosophy is full of scriptural quotations, it's free from any material affinity, if it doesn't have, it doesn't include a hero, an unfailing hero, who never fails to protect his devotees, then it's not very shobha. Jaya Jaya Gaurachandra Arotika Shobha. Yeah. It's not very brilliant. You know? Socrates made the same point. Something may be very logical, but it's also going to be brilliant, you know, shobha, to satisfy our hankerings for truth. Okay, so Prabhupada starting off is the whole function. Is that Avatara Katha describes Krishna and his associates and different avatars, but because people are lacking, you know, this kind of instruction and education, they don't feel any kind of this rational motive to do it, nor do they feel any kind of emotional attraction to do it, to hear about them. Number six. Okay. My dear. Okay, wait a second. Go ahead. Yeah, okay. It should always be remembered that the material creation is created for the salvation of conditioned souls. The merciful Lord, out of his causeless mercy, descends to various planets in the material world, and acts for the salvation of conditioned souls. That makes the history and narrations worth reading. And of course, this is one of my favorite pictures. Lord Chaitanya surrounded by Prakashananda Saraswati and all the sannyasis in Varanasi. And of course, he's doing pastimes in Leela to attract all of them. And then, of course, gives very logical explanation of, you know, of Krishna's energies and incarnations like that. So out of his mercy, he's coming here. Yeah. Okay. Number seven. It's a very short purport. Srimad Bhagavatam offers such transcendental topics of the Lord in relation with great devotees. Therefore, the topics of the devotees and the Lord are to be given respectful oral reception. And for the topics of the devotees are to give respectful oral reception. So Prabhupada is saying that this is, you know, we can try and like do so many tricks and so many things to get people to understand the culture and the philosophy. But in some ways, our responsibility is to remain pure. You know, chant our rounds, follow principles, hear Krishna Katha, get up early. And this way we have purified consciousness. And then Krishna's responsibility is to send innocent people, you know, just stumble across our path. One devotee, my good friend Kritakarma, if you know him, was a Cuban devotee, left his body some time ago. He said he was at the university, maybe like Minnesota or Wisconsin, like that. And he was a son of a Cuban refugee. Of course, he was a refugee. His father had been a big, very prominent surgeon in Cuba, very respected. And his license had nothing in America. So when he came here, he ended up being the guy who cleaned the corpses up, you know, for the funeral homes. Yeah. So anyway, he was going to college, university. And he was riding his bicycle, and there was one brahmachari, just, you know, in a full brahmachari dress with a book bag, and just apparently totally miserable, just standing there. Okay, tell the president, maybe go out on book distribution. Okay, I'm out on book distribution. And he wasn't like approaching anybody or anything, you know, and not looking very attractive. But Krishna, you know, was inspiring within the heart. So our good Kritakarma Das, Carlos Rosell, saw him and saw him dressed like a monk. Instead of going, sort of driving his bicycle around him a few times. And finally, the guy didn't bite him or anything, so he came up closer to him and said, "Hey," I said, "hello." I said, "Are you a monk?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "What do you have in the bag?" "I got some books. You want one?" So he bought a book, you know. So we got to stay pure. Krishna will send innocent people. And then their responsibility, Prabhupada was saying, and maybe other things too, but what is to be patient to understand the condition of this material world like that. And then the Sankirtan process is a success. You know? So Prabhupada says here, the topics of the devotees and the Lord are to be given respectful oral reception. So some kind of attitude of respect, which is what Shanta Rahas, and beyond that of even like some more positive attitudes, even better, of course. You know? So this kind of today's topic out of the 10 is Krishna and the avatar Katha. And Krishna's present in this world through his avatars and through his energies. And number 8, we're thinking about this a little bit broader here, because the contrast is kind of the competition. You know, other kinds of katha. Tadvag vishargo janataga viplavo vyasam tirtham. You know, vyasam tirtham. Topics of men and women and all these things are like a pilgrimage place for crows. And so we look at some of the crow katha here, which is not so bad, I don't think, in some way. I didn't see this movie. I heard a little bit about it. It was called A Few Good Men. That was the name of the movie in 1992. And it's interesting here. Look at this. The budget for it was estimated at $40 million. Okay. What kind of movie could we do in ISKCON? What kind of avatar katha could we do? Of course, you see, you know, there's what, a little Krishna that was done quite some time ago with Madhupanda and others. And I think it's done in three parts. Little Krishna, the hero, what is it called, the darling of Vrindavan, little Krishna, the something warrior, and something else, you know. And those are pretty good. If you go through and see, like, there's a couple points where it seems the philosophy is not so together. But in general, it's a pretty good thing, you know. And Prabhupada's objection would be that there's not, like, enough logical explanation of who Krishna is. You know? And also, you know, like that. So they're not perfect, but something there. and what kind of budget did it take to make those? Then, of course, the point is, too, is that maybe even if they had higher knowledge of what they were trying to do, they had to be able to get the income to be able to pay for the movies to get them out. And again, this is like, you know, Lord Chaitanya shaving off his sika, or devotees going out in civil dress, you know, like that. You know? So $40 million to make this movie. And then what was the response? In the U.S., they collected $140 million. Outside the U.S., they collected another $100 million. So $240 million worldwide. And so far, rentals have come $70 million. So that puts us up over $300 million income. So good business. Yeah. Was it five times, four times? I don't know, some ridiculous time number of profit on their movie like that. Yeah. And they have the admissions in Sweden. 264,000 people in Sweden saw the movie. Maybe some people came back twice. I can't imagine that. Yeah. Romeo and Juliet, maybe, but yeah, A Few Good Men. Yeah. And it's mostly a movie in the mode of passion, honor, friendship, loyalty, nation, you know, that kind of thing. So maybe a little bit higher than just gross satisfaction of the tongue, belly, and genitals like that, you know. So we got, of course, right at the top, we got a nice triangle, you know, two men and one woman, you know, everything there, justice, you know. So it's some point that seems that very much we have a lot of competition, you know, in getting out the message and getting out the ideas. And, of course, just getting the books out by themselves, okay, that's impetus by Prabhupada, emphasis is getting the books out and getting people to buy them, because when people buy them, they take them as being something worthwhile. And I don't know how many people, it'd be a nice survey, how many people got a book from a friend who bought it. And he bought it, and he thought, and after he saw what it was, he said, oh, wow, it's not what I wanted or something. You know, well, my friend, he's into this. Okay. And it's not just something I got for free so I can just leave off in the laundromat or something like that. You know? So just that point of getting Krishna Katha out there, and if somehow or other it ends up in the right person's hands, you know, then it will have a reaction like that, of purifying them and allowing them to be also become instruments in spreading Krishna consciousness. So, and also there's the whole point to these my kind of conclusion was that Prabhupada had produced all the written material, the majority, not that it stops, but that our job was to take it and make it into movies. And I mentioned that to Bhakti Charu Swami, and he said the same thing. That's why he got really inspired to do the Abhay Charan series, which went on Doordarshan. It was, you know, of course, it was on national television, and the only thing which kind of preempted it was a big soccer match. That was the same time that it would get like preempted. But other than that, it went as a popular, you know, popular series like that with a very low budget, you know, struggling to do it properly like that and so on. And other than that, there's the whole point of taking these stories. You know, you can put them into modern ISKCON perspective, and then what happens is they become very, you know, very intense. You know, when you don't, especially when people think you're telling a real story about what really happened, you know. And they can translate very practically into our modern world, into our actual ISKCON situation. The general perspective, of course, Prabhupada says in 2.2.12 that one should not go beyond the first two cantos until one is free from gross illicit sex. And I've heard when the person came to Prabhupada who was going to try and do the whole Bhagavatam, if he'd done the Mahabharata or Ramayana before, Prabhupada said, first two cantos. And he kept talking about everything, 10th canto, and Prabhupada kept saying, first two cantos. Yeah. So it doesn't mean we find in the first two cantos, we find like some general descriptions of the later cantos and what's going to happen like that. But until the audience, if it's for a public audience, yeah, then first two cantos, and, you know, the pregnancy of Ditti in the evening. Oh, you can make that into such a modern movie or a movie that people could relate to very much, yeah. But also beyond that, of course, you can take the same basic movies and expand them in different ways. And also one popular preaching program is movie night. It's such at the universities and temple. People come, I think Babanandaji had in Australia a full nice dinner. And with the first run movie, you can buy them, you know, rent them. And then have some kind of Krishna conscious perspective or commentary on them like that, or discussion like that of the content. And then by that, taking people maybe into more serious, you know, more serious discussions. Movies like Gandhi and what else? Robin Williams' movie, What Dreams May Come. There's so many, you know, movies which don't have much, you know, even none of breaking the four principles and inspire people, you know, with a discussion to consider the spiritual aspects like that, you know, so on. So it's kind of our little discussion on this verse. And real briefly, then I want to maybe add a couple comments about yesterday's verse, because there's such a long purport there. Today's purport was very short. So if we go to the next slide, number 9, yeah, we'll go back from Avatarkata to Manu, the rules of Manu. And number 9, we have a Dharma Shastra with some Brahmin here. Looks like he's from the Shastric age on the bank of the Ganga. And go back a little more. Number 10. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam 1925. Suta Goswami said, Maharaj Yudhisthira, after hearing Bhishmadeva speak in that appealing tone, asked him, in the presence of all the great rishis, about the essential principles of various religious duties. So number 8 is, that's interesting, First Canto, Chapter 8, is prayers by Queen Kunti, and the prayers actually start on the 18th verse. So it's 1:8, 1:8. And then right after that, it describes after they induced Krishna to stay, how Krishna went and visited Bhishmadeva. And then specifically, he didn't ask, you know, Bhishmadeva to tell about, you know, Das Avatar or something. He asked him to tell about the Manu and the instructions of Manu, and especially what is called Dandha. Dandavidi, yeah. Vastuveda, Dandaveda, yeah. Because the king has the danda, you know, for controlling people. So for several days, Bhishma instructed Yudhisthira, and it's and probably in the purport gives nice explanation. Slide number 11. The conception of the four castes and four orders of life, as planned by the Lord Himself. Bhagavad Gita 4:13, is to accelerate transcendental qualities of the living entity, of the individual person, so that he may gradually realize his spiritual identity and thus act accordingly to get free from material bondage or conditioned life. So it's a very nice definition. Varna Ashram is that psychosocial system which accelerates the transcendental qualities of the spirit soul. It's not the qualities, it's a nice ambience. It's a nice ambience. In the beginning, that may be all we can do. And all we can give is a very therapeutic ambience before we actually can apply the medicine directly to the soul, which we would call like Bhagavad Dharma. Okay. And almost, Prabhupada said, in almost all the Puranas, subject matter is described in the same spirit. And so also in the Mahabharata, it is more elaborately described by Bhishmadeva in the Shanti Parva, beginning with the 60th chapter. So in the Ganguly version translation, which I think is about 10-point type or something, maybe about 10 and a half, not very big. As I remember, it's about, it was 135 pages of instructions from Bhishmadeva, and several authorities, you know, within the Vedas and Indologists, they all say this is the best summary, you know, of Varna Ashram and the entire, you know, all the Vedas like that. So these two purports probably just summarizes the summary and really concentrated, very concentrated. It makes a nice little pamphlet to distribute to these people like sociologists, economists, political science people. Okay. And then probably in the purports he says actually the qualified brahmanas are meant to give directions to the kings. Qualified brahmanas are meant to give directions to the kings. What should the brahmana do? And one of the things, should give direction to the kings for proper administration in terms of scriptures like the Manu Samhita and Parashara's Dharma Shastras. Dharma Shastras of Parashara. So we mentioned this before, that we read this And we were in Berkeley. So we went up to the University of California library there, about 12 minutes away. And we started looking, for Parasara's Dharma Shastras. And they have over 1 million books. I don't know how many, all the different resources and branches. And I was trying to find it, and they kept coming back, in Devanagari or something like this. And after some time, about 5 different librarians all got involved. It was like a real, a real interesting search for them, something interesting. So I went through this database, that database, and finally they came down to one little old freestanding card catalog. And they found it. And they said, oh, okay, there's an English copy over in the law library. So I went over to the Bolt Hall Law Library, and I, the call number, okay. And I think it was the first basement. It wasn't the second sub-basement. But there I was going down to the cement basement and all the stacks up piled together. And I came along, and there was one bookcase talked to up to, 60 on Hindu law. Then I came down, and there it was, Parashara's Dharma Shastra. And I pulled it out. And just about when I pulled it out, a little bit behind me on the wall there, this door opened up. And this guy came out. And this little bit of a suit on, he was kind of like locking the door up, And he said, oh, do you speak Sanskrit? Kind of a German accent, And I said, well, a little bit. He kind of, twinkled his eye at me and said, so do I. He went away. So it was kind of a very odd thing. Okay. So next slide, number 12, the Parasara Dharma Shastra. Now, I don't think this was a copy that we had. The devotees stole it and lost it. Hey, great, But this is another copy which we have online. If you want to go to our webpage, Neos's webpage, not ours, bhakti.org, B-H-A-T-I, kind of bhakti without the K, .org. And you can find in there this copy, which I just downloaded. And this copy is labeled The Institutes of Parashara, translated into English by Krishna Kamal Bhattacharya, formerly Professor of Sanskrit in the Presidency College of Calcutta, Professor of Law, Ripon College, Vakil High Courts, and printed by J.W. Thomas at the Baptist Missionary Press, and published by the Asiatic Society, 57 Park Street, 1887. So what, that was before Prabhupada was born, no? Yeah. And it's, I don't know, the other translation was a little different. And he talks about two translations being done. But as far as I know, since that time, nobody else has translated it. Okay. It has several chapters. First part, I think, is rules and regulations, which you're supposed to do. And the second part is things for expiations. Things that you're supposed to do to purify yourself if you commit some sin. So this one I remember, I'm mentioning this one here, it may seem a little gross here, but there's a reason for it. It is chapter 7, text 4. Gauri, fair, is the appellation of a female child when she is only 8 years old. Okay. Rohini, scarlet, is her name when she is 9. She is Kanya, virgin, when 10 years old. Thereafter, she becomes similar to a female who has her courses month by month. 5. When the 12th year is reached by the female child, if a guardian does not give her away in marriage, her forefathers drink without interruption during each succeeding month whatever blood passes in her courses. The father and mother and likewise the eldest brother, all these three relatives will go to hell if before menstruation they neglect to marry her. If a brahmana deluded by ignorance and pride comes to marry a girl of the aforesaid kind, he does not deserve to be spoken to. Food should not be partaken in the company with him. That brahmana becomes the husband of a shudra girl. Okay. So I mentioned this one because later I heard Prabhupada in a room conversation, one tape, and Prabhupada actually cited this. He says the brahmana should know these things. So I'm not sure how many other times he actually uses the instructions. Some of the instructions you see, are kind of prominent. But this one, he actually was a room conversation. He's talking about how girls should have the facility of getting married, like that at a young age. And he He what? And he mentions this about, you know, the answer here is really the game. It's so wonderful. Her forefathers drink without interruption during each succeeding month, whatever blood is passed in their courses. So when Prabhupada said that, the girls in the room all went, yeah, like that. And the guys didn't say much loud, but the girls were really repulsed. And then Prabhupada quickly said, of course, it is figurative. It is figurative, you know. So I'm not sure if Prabhupada was going to compensate for people in the room. But even forefathers, of course, we're talking about them being in a subtle atmosphere of Pitriloka and hell and different things like that, and receiving the benefits of the sacrifices of their descendants, but also receiving the results of their bad activities. You know? And so, of course, that is a very subtle level. So maybe they're not forced to, you know, grossly, you know, drink these fluids, but to hear about it like every month on a regular basis or something like that. Okay, but that's why I brought it up, because Prabhupada actually did use it, you know. And then, you know, it's a whole topic comes up, you know, because I'm also trying to act like a guide, not spiritual master, you know, consultant, philosopher, guide, guru. That's actually the term that fits more with a small g, maybe spiritual master with a small s. A lot of people, and some of our disciples is exactly what's happening. I've known them for maybe, you know, 10 years and now are 15 years, and their daughters now are growing up very nice, transcendental little girls, obviously intense karma. But they're reaching, you know, 10 years old, 11 years old, and it's just their consciousness is changing very much, you know, very much, you know. So it's also interesting, too, because I think in California the law is that a girl can legally get married, you know, live with her husband, have children, have relations, at 16 years old by her parents' consent. And 18 years old, even without her parents' consent, a girl can go ahead and get married and live legally like that. And by 20, you know, even before she's actually 21 years old like that. It's interesting. So as the general, of course, understanding the science of all this, how it's supposed to work, you know, in general, of course, my reading and studying everything else is the idea, because remember, I mean, as Americans all growing up, you know, that most of these pastimes take place in middle school, in the 7th and the 8th grade. Until the 4th, 5th, and 6th grade, it's pretty much children's parties and that kind of stuff. But in 7th and 8th, that's when the conjugal feelings start to arouse, especially. And even it's a separated period, because there's a lot of maturity has to go on during these times, and will also be protected, you know, from heavier influences and chance to be free from the childish influences. And Prabhupada said this is the age when all these Radha Krishna pastimes take place. And of course, they're so intense, you know. And so, again, like the situation we saw just naturally developing was that. Then you start having, like, you know, varsity football sports, and the boys start to have a chance to distinguish their manliness and different athletic abilities, and they get prizes like special sweaters and pins and stuff, you know. And then some of the boys and girls start going steady, you know, going steady, trying to accomplish what should be accomplished by the society, which is not, you know. And then, of course, maybe the boy will give his steady girlfriend his varsity football pin or sweater, you know. If Radharani catches a glimpse of Chandravali heading off to the 7th grade in a geometry class, and she thinks she's wearing Krishna's football sweater, you know, it's death on wheels for her. Oh, my God. Yeah, then Lalita has to reassure her, no, Krishna was wearing his sweater. Are you sure? I don't know. Yeah. So Prabhupada said it, nothing very serious. But that age, you know, it's life and death. You know, who's associating with who, which boy is, you know, favoring which girl. You know? So it's a very natural time to get some kind of structure for these energies, to put them in a positive perspective, what to speak of keeping them from being destructive. You know? And for that purpose, you know, these institutes exist. So then Prabhupada's describing. He was basically almost, you might say, that the girl is like, 10 years old or something, and the boy maybe is like 16 years old, and then they're going steady, which even in our society is legal. If they're not living together or cohabiting, okay, you have certain religious functions and everything else, okay. It probably falls quite within the ranges of legal, you know, legal shelter that a boy and girl can have that relationship. And of course, culturally, they know this is it. This is a long-term relationship. Then there's certain. Then she puts his picture on her altar along with the teddy bear and other things, you know, and very nice thing, thinking about life. And mind is fixed, understanding what I'm trying to do, you know. And then, probably said at a certain point, the girl cooks for the first time with the mother's help. A little, you know, little 10-year-old girl, 11-year-old girl cooking a feast or something like that. And she comes and delivers it, and, you know, this certain ceremony, this and that. And probably this guy was describing some of that. It wasn't his life. And then by the time she's 16, he's 22, he's finished his university things, his mentality is fixed. And then, okay, the formal living together like that, so on. So this is some general comment about how the devotees, because they're trained in Bhagavad Dharma, they can see the perspective, they can see what the purpose of this thing is, and therefore just a little bit of a guide, you know, they can figure out the details without much problem. So devotees don't need so much of these things, you know, but the common people, the details have to be there and this kind of stuff to help them give specific guidance and application. Bhagavad Gita's third chapter starts talking about all living into the system, food grains come from rain, you know, and this and that. And later, of course, there's descriptions of Brahma karma, Kshatriya karma, and then Bhagavatam gives more details, you know, on the perspective of why we're doing it, and later on also details on different ceremonies and different kinds of activities, you know. And the Prabhupada's purports some more details, you know. So that's kind of our presentation here. It's a very, very nice section in the Bhagavatam. Yeah, next slide there. Thank you. Our address is there again. Describing a kind of nice one other way of looking at the Bhagavatam, that we're going to cover 10 topics. And one of these, is especially today, is this whole avatar katha and having festivals and celebrating these things, you know, and expanding them in so many ways. And even Rath Yatra, oh, goodness, Rath Yatra katha. You know, it's one way to conquer people, to get them involved with that. You know? And then, of course, yesterday's verse was kind of the more basic thing to create the ambience where avatar katha can be appreciated. So, any questions, comments, complaints?
All right, I've unmuted everyone.
Acha, acha.
I have a question, Maharaj.
Who is this?
I'm sorry. I'm creating an echo. I'm going to turn mine down a little bit. We just read about how there's all these different categories of a Mahapurana, of which the Bhagavatam is, you know, like the greatest. And it mentions that there's in Puranas, there's stories about kings or dynasties and their activities, so who they are and what they do. So one of the categories for the Bhagavatam is the avatars of the Lord, and then they're the manvantaras specifically. So why the differentiation between the avatars of the Lord and the manvantaras? Because the avatars of the Lord also include the manvantaras along with Shaktivesh avatars, or why is it just not merged into one? Why specifically we're pointing out the manvantaras?
Well, I would speculate, like I was saying, it's just because, you know, we're trying to, the Bhagavatam is trying to reach out to all kinds of people. And therefore, you know, the activities of the Manus, which are more in terms of regulating the general populace. I mean, you don't have to got to tell Arjuna, don't have sex with your mother, don't murder your daughters, you know. Yeah, but a lot of people, you know, need that kind of stuff, you know. And so then, therefore, the Puranas and stuff for the mass of people, they describe these things, and then give us a perspective that will create an ambience, you know, where we can then hear about other kinds of avatars, you know, Lila avatars, you know, and Purusha avatars. I mean, unless you're going to Purusha avatars, you've got to have a little bit of conviction there's something beyond what we see, and somebody actually has some knowledge about it, you know, like that. So that has to create a, you know, more of goodness atmosphere and investigative atmosphere, and then we can understand Purusha avatars. Then after that, Sriman Narayan. Then after that, Leela avatars, kind of like a sequence like that. You know.
Okay.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for the class. That was just so much fun. At the beginning of class, did you say that the Chaitanya Charitamrita is a class on Srimad Bhagavatam?
Yeah, that's the conclusion we came to here at the Anjaneya Sutta Academy. Yeah, Lord Chaitanya, I never heard it from Prabhupada, but he says, you know, Lord Chaitanya is the ideal preacher of Srimad Bhagavatam. And so that's what we see. Lord Chaitanya is showing us how, actually he says, you can only understand Srimad Bhagavatam when you become a madman like me. So he's showing us, you know, he's simply quoting from the Bhagavatam and relishing the Bhagavatam, and he's demonstrating, you know, what we're supposed to do, which is always hearing and chanting, you know, the Bhagavatam like that. So Chaitanya Charitamrita becomes like a time, place, and circumstance. It becomes a very, very good class, you know, based on Srimad Bhagavatam.
Well, that's excellent, and I'm going to quote you on that.
Okay. The Anjaneya Sutta Academy is also Tom Brown and Buck White here, too, along with me.
I always kind of saw the, it's a progression. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, ultimately, surrender unto me. And why to surrender unto me? And in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's sort of how to surrender to Krishna. And then the Chaitanya Charitamrita is what happens when you surrender to Krishna.
And also in the end of the Bhagavatam, is, Krishna says, I'll surrender unto you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have a list of movies that you think are for preaching on your website?
Not really, but there is like literature, you know, for example, looking at, because see, we started the North American Institute for Oriental and Classical Studies, and that kind of came out of, what it came out of was in South America, where this cultural preaching goes kind of better. I mean, this in South America, they have a much more cultural view of life. They say, Narahari can translate this, los norteamericanos son muy cuadráticos, which would contextually translate as North Americans are blockheads, like that. We're all got this Northern German, you know, view of life, you know. But in South America, the university is more likely to be named after a great poet or a great author or a great, you know, librarian than it is after a, you know, a scientist, you know, so on. Some really incredible authors, you know. So anyway, they Dora Basan, Divyavani Vividasi, she started a at her, she has five doctorates, so she started the thing, her university, and it was approved, the Institute for Oriental and Occidental Classical Studies. And through that, of course, she could present, you know, in perspective all of our culture, but also other cultures too, inspiring other people. She has like a nice group of Muslim people who, you know, are discussing and inspiring like that. So then because of that, that's what, you know, for that perspective, then we have world classical literature. A Thousand and One Arabian Nights, boy, you can extract something out of it. But in general, it's kind of a bloodthirsty thing without much depth to it, you know. And then Analectics of Confucius and those things, kind of dry, you know. The Oriental stuff, there's five great classics, they say. But the only one I think really worthwhile is Journey to the West, which is also called Monkey. And this is a whole story of Monkey and Piggy coming from India with a monk to get higher knowledge from India, of course. And it's pretty good. It has some perspective and culture in it. Yeah. A lot of these things have a whole thing about the history of translation and how they were translated from an arrogant European perspective. And now as they're beginning to be translated properly, you're seeing that people do have great cultural assets and you can inspire those. I mean, this is exactly what happens. In Chinese devotees, they say, I've seen several times, just that, you know, once you, if you know some Wukong, you know Chinese people. And it's just, it's a fact. You know, there's certain things about how they're culturally, even now to this day. 2 weeks ago in Chicago, I was mentioning this, and the Chinese devotees, they were just like nodding their heads up and down, like, incredibly, yes, that's how it is. That's how we think, you know. And then, of course, you know, the Bible and, you know, and the Middle Eastern, other Middle Eastern literature. And in Europe, of course, Don Quixote, Sancho Panza, and Shakespeare. And then coming down through English literature, you know, Sherlock Holmes is kind of an adventure story. It's not much there, but it's so popular. And Agatha Christie, of course, is the most translated and popular, I think, authoress in the history of the world, which shows you that people want mysteries. You know, mystery stories will always, you put your preaching into a little bit of mystery, not to try and tell everybody the answers, to create some questions, some mystery, you know, like that. And then Water Babies, that was a moral story for children, some Christianity in there. And Wind in the Willows, which Walt Disney made into a movie. And all these you find higher character where people consider these things. But also what you find is also some like directly, you know, religious and spiritual activity in them like that and so on. So it's a controversy whether we should try and like inspire people to look back at their heritage. And other people say, no, it's Western heritage is dead. And others say, well, let's go straight for the Oriental thing. Try and bring in the Oriental traditions and do yoga classes and do you know, martial arts classes and stuff like that, which different places do with effect, you know. So it's a whole perspective, you know, of the images. And I mean, American image to a large degree is this in the cowboy or the secret agent, you know, something, you know, love stories, you know. But everybody without that, in Peru, we work a lot of preaching there, and big, big scholars, you know, political revolutionaries, Che Guevara's associates, they're saying that this Peru has lost its hero image. You know, they don't know who they are. Are they Incas? Are they pre-Incas? Are they Spanish? Are they, you know, modern, you know, Americans? And it's a country without a hero, you know? And what, you know, better than everybody else is supposed to embody in the literature and stuff, and this is simply to, you know, keep that image, you know, so on. Yeah. So movies and stuff, not so much, but there is like that a little bit of discussion of some of the Western literature and stuff, which many times you meet people and stuff, and they resonate with, oh, you know that. You know those people. Oh, what are your books? Yeah, give me one of your books. Yeah.
Started.
Oops, I pressed the wrong button. Maharaj, I was listening on a conversation that Srila Prabhupada is having with one Indian gentleman who wanted to do a movie about Krishna's pastimes. Actually, he was proposing an animated film, and Prabhupada is discouraging him. You know about what I'm referring to?
It could be. I mean, probably, he said they'll just take it as like stories, you know, myths.
Yes.
They won't take it serious, you know. Yeah.
I think his point was that just to go and see a movie is not going to affect them. What they really need to do is have a regular program of hearing. At least in that context, he was really discouraging. What he said it was, I believe, was that it was all right, but in consideration of the amount of money and energy it would take, he was discouraging him, at least in this particular instance.
I would say probably just, I mean, he would try to encourage people to use the money for something else. Yeah. But if they were damned and determined to do it, it was better they did that than you know, some movie of some guy chasing women and drinking alcohol, you know. So that it's kind of looks like that, you know. In that respect, yeah, it's okay. And probably, for example, in what was it? There was a Manipuri drama going on in the Bombay Theater, you know, Prabhupada's, our theater in the temple there. And apparently there was some discrepancies in philosophy, and Prabhupada told Madhavisa to hop up and stop it, and all these big people were there. So Madhavisa was, okay, stop this drama, you know. But then Prabhupada said, stop it, you know. So he was, look, he was just about ready to hop up, and then Prabhupada grabbed him and pulled him down and said, oh, it is all right. It is just a play. It is just a drama, you know. So in that respect, I think, you know, just, yeah, we appreciate it. If people are, you know, for example, we distribute grains in Ekadasi to carnies. Yeah. And so if you're eating a full feast, they don't go out and eat hamburgers. Okay, so which is better, you know, to eat grains in Ekadasi, prasadam, or to go out and eat hamburgers, you know? But yeah, but if people have the money and the interest, you know, then yeah, there's so many. I think because also the little Krishna movie, for example, Madhu Pandit and other people, you see them right in there. They were there as like philosophical consultants, you know, and very sensitive to that. How much intellectual, proper intellectual perspective is being passed along like that. And so I think they did a good job, you know, considering like, I think it was a good job, you know. People kind of got the impression. They talk about it as myths and things like that and so on. But it's the feeling is that, you know, well, maybe these things are true, you know. And considering the modern Indian ambience in many ways, the mass market, woof, you know, these things are definitely nothing more than mental inventions of people from bygone ages.
Okay.
Srila Prabhupada did emphasize books. And it's within our reach. Books are within our reach. We could make beautiful books to attract conditioned souls.
Okay,
but if you look at the end of any movie and you see the credit scroll, it goes on for like 10 minutes. It's just ridiculous. I mean, you got costume designers, you got all kinds of specialized fields just rolling, hundreds and hundreds of
riggers,
people involved.
Gaffers.
Yeah. That's boring.
The people that brought the lunch.
But also, too, that was, for example, with Yadubar. Like, for example, there was one, he really wanted the movie on Life Comes from Life. There's one, I forgot what the movie was. There were a couple movies specifically Prabhupada designed. And also, from the very beginning, he was encouraging drama, you know, from the very beginning and things like that. And exactly what he did. Actually, it was Srup Damodar. I know like that. That was the program. He was supposed to go to Russia with Sudama's Age of Kali play, and he was supposed to then put on simultaneously science congresses. So with Srup Damodar, we had the Bhakti Vedanta Institute, which was very hard, a lot of prasadam, and very hard discussions on science, and very good results. But simultaneously with that was Ranganiketan, which was a whole Manipuri troupe, which had also strong. So the two combined together, I mean, Nobel laureates would come with their wives and friends to see the Ranganiketan program with the ambassador of India. And the next day, they would go to the science programs then, you know, like that. And so the two combined together of, you know, it's to say, what's the thing? After you see the movie, you want to buy the book, right? You know?
Okay. Yeah, so the documentaries have become very, possible for one person to do. You see them all over YouTube now, and actually, it's a good medium to actually get across a point.
And then the thing is, somehow they're too big to catch on. Oh God, it's what the whole weird thing is that, you know, somehow it becomes popular. This and that, it just amazing how fast ideas can get out there and stuff. But like you said, it has to be continuous. Yeah?
A thing I keep in mind about history is, people 100 years ago or 10,000 years ago felt that they were living in modern times. They didn't say, here we are in ancient Egypt with the pharaohs and people will read about us in books 2,000 years from now. No, they felt that they were at, just like we think it's modern times now. Well, we're going to be ancient history someday.
Oh, my goodness. They asked Albert Einstein, do you think the Third World War will be fought with nuclear weapons?
Yeah.
And Albert Einstein said, I don't know if it will be fought with nuclear weapons or not, but I know if the Third World War is fought with nuclear weapons, the Fourth World War will be fought with rocks.
Yeah.
So are we going up or down?
There'll be people looking back at this time and seeing this generation destroyed the planet. What were they thinking?
Victor Borge, the comedian, Victor Borge did a whole thing about in the future they dig up America.
Oh, okay.
It's funny. It's so funny.
Oh, wow.
We believe the capital was either Nyuk, that's NYC, because we see this written all over, or the Pound Laundry, which is derived from their language as washing and a measurement of weight, ton. So it was either Nyuk or the Pound Laundry.
Oh, my goodness.
It goes on and on. It's hysterical.
Oh.
How they miss it.
With a perspective, then you can understand how it relates to the present moment. You know, what kind of media, what kind of communication is going on.
Well, one thing I want to know is that all these scientists that say, oh, they must have had amazing energies, but they thought they came from their gods. They used to bow down and say incantations. But we know that that's a particle accelerator gizmo atomics fusion device. Well, who made that?
Yeah.
You know?
Who made the pyramids?
The one thing they always reject is that they worshipped probably demigods. Well, rewarded them with these technologies and inspired them, or came here. Now that's becoming Drita Karma is showing that they came here.
So much. Archaeology is not a dead science. So many more things being discovered like this and that.
All the Hindu kings say they come from the line of Surya or Chandra, sun or moon.
Yeah.
And that's why fourth chapter, Bibhishan is the first disciple of Krishna in that kingly line.
Wow.
But they summarily reject that.
I guess I have to go now. I'm supposed to call up Mr. Ram Giridhari before he turns into a pumpkin and talk about the school in Houston, which is coming along very well, the primary school there.
Carry on.
But now it looks like San Francisco wants to also just copy it. And then after that, maybe Chicago. So maybe you have a whole Montessori-type, money-making, profitable school and a whole generation of movie makers. So thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
All right, I should have had that.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.